preacher preach. It's just how simple the book of James is. I mean, it is as straightforward as it comes. A lot of wisdom, a lot of straightforward. Yet at the same time, as we'll see today, there'll be some complexity. So one thing I wanted to note to you today, I am not going to be reading out of the English Standard Version, which is the Bible that we typically read out of. This is not a knock on the English Standard Version. But one of the things is, even though James is very accessible and very applicable to the Christian life, we have to remember that it was written by a Jew in first century world. And so the language sometimes can be very confusing. And one of the translation realities of the ESV is it is very, tries to be as close to the original language as possible. And so when you read that, sometimes it can be a little confusing. I did a little test on my wife and several other people. I was like, hey, I want you to just open up James 3:13. Go ahead and read that in the ESV and tell me what it means. You can look at that. And it's wild. You're like, I have no idea. So this morning I'm going to be reading it out of the NIV. One of the things I do love about the NIV is it's just a very accessible book, translation of the Bible. I don't necessarily always recommend it. I do like the ESV a tremendous amount as well. But we're going to be reading out of the NIV. But with that being said, I want to tell a story before jumping into the text. Several years ago, I had the honor, and I say this very loosely, the honor of being an assistant basketball coach for a middle school boys basketball team. Whew. Now, the head coach was a good friend of mine, and he invited me to help out, not just to teach the boys about the game of basketball, but to help mold them into men. You know, the next generation of leaders and warriors, gentlemen, you know, whatever middle school boys are supposed to become after they stop losing their water bottles after a practice. So the coach gathered the boys into the room one day, into a conference room, and he says, boys, I want to have a conversation with you. And I want to talk to you about something very important. What makes a man? What makes a man? Yeah, God makes a man. The boys sat there, frozen. You could have heard a pin drop. Some were looking at the ceiling, the others the floor, others were playing with their thumbs. It was total silence. No boy had the courage to speak up to the question, what makes a man? And finally, after what felt like forever, the shortest kid on our team, little Josh Bush, who probably weighed as much as a basketball, raised his hand and he said, I know. So we all leaned in to what Josh Bush, this little guy, would say about what makes a man. And he said, black coffee. Drinking black coffee. Yes, Josh, drinking black coffee. We all laughed. It cut the tension in the room, but it left an indelible mark. What is it that makes a man? Well, we're not asking the question, what makes a man today? That is not the question. But we are asking a very similar question. And it's the question James gives to us in James 3. It's not what makes a man, but what makes one wise? What are the characteristics of a wise person? Now, I'm not putting that to you today. This is not the middle school boys basketball conversation. But James asks this question about what makes one wise because he's trying to address head on people who are claiming to be wise in the church when in fact they were foolish. That is, people in the church were taking unbiblical stances on what it means to be wise, and it was creating disorder and bringing vile practices into the church. This is what embracing the characteristic of the worldly wisdom, James says, is going to happen. There'll be deception, foolishness, disorder, vile practices, and on and on and on. And so he's putting to us the question that I'm putting before you today. What are the characteristics of a wise person? You know, we need to answer this question today because we live in a world that is in desperate need of wise people. We live in a world where chaos seems to reign, where violence is greater than peace. We need wise people in this world to move into the chaos and to move into the violence. Have you ever thought that that wise person could be you? What if you were someone who could bring isolated neighbors together in your neighborhood and to create a loving and gracious and peace-loving community? What if you were someone who could bring encouragement and hope to the downtrodden of the schools that you go to? What if you were someone that could bring blessings and life to generations upon generations of people? What if you were someone who is known more as a peacemaker than a troublemaker? In 5 verses, James is going to present the reality that could be yours. And like I said, it is a little challenging, but if we lean in and we listen very clearly to what James defines as a wise person and wrestle with the realities that we often come into conflict with as to what we believe a wise person is, then we can become wise people in a world that desperately needs it. So James 3, what makes a wise person? If you have a Bible, you can go with me there. If you have a phone, you can click on NIV. Like I said, we're going to be reading out of the NIV. James 3, verses 13 through 18. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. What makes one wise? Here's the answer. I'm giving to you right at the front. Those who are wise do good deeds while thinking little of themselves. Those who are wise, and we're going to press this, do good deeds while thinking little of themselves. This is what James gives to us in verse 13. Who is wise and understanding? Let them show their wisdom. Let them show that they are wise by their good life. Meaning, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. The wise are those who live a good life, doing good deeds while thinking little of themselves. The wise perform good deeds for the benefit of others, not themselves. They don't do it. They don't do good deeds so that other people will look at them and say, what an amazing person. I want to be around them. They don't perform deeds so that people will prop them up and bless them with their gifts or their finances or their power. The wise simply do good for God or for others. Indeed, wise people think very little of themselves. James says that the wise are humble. Now, this is where the ESV and the NIV disagree, but I want to kind of bring these two different translations together. In the ESV, it says the meekness of wisdom. In the NIV, it talks about the humility that comes from wisdom. The word that these translators are trying to unpack is the Greek word protos. It can be translated humility. It can be translated meekness. It can be translated gentleness. And while you might think of protos as humility, meekness, and gentleness as weakness, what I want you to know is right now, please stop. Get that out of your head. Protos, humility, meekness, is not weakness. What this is, it is strength that has been submitted to someone who is greater. It's the equivalent. Protos is the equivalent of a wild stallion who used to roam free and buck and wild and go crazy, but then it was broken in by a trained horse person. And then once that person has been trained, it can move this wild and powerful stallion by bit and bridle. Protos is strength that has been submitted. This is the protos of wisdom, the humility that comes from wisdom. Humility is not weakness. Humility, as I like to say, is an accurate view of yourself, both in your strengths and your weakness. The wise, therefore, submit themselves, all of themselves, in their strength and weakness to God, and say to him, take me where you want to go. Tell me what you want me to do. The wise understand that the self is not the center of the world, that God is. The wise, the characteristic of the wise, are those who do good while thinking very little of themselves. This might not sound profound to you, but what I want to do for you right now is to press this a bit, because the definition of the wise that James gives to us, that I have presented to you, is indeed deeply offensive. Deeply. Wisdom does not revolve around yourself, but the way the world defines it is the opposite. The world defines the wise as individuals who possess attributes related to the self, whether it be age, intellect, knowledge, wealth, or you fill in the blank. Think about the people that are presented to us as wise in our world. If you close your eyes, like I did, and when I was thinking about this, when you close your eyes and you think of a wise person, who is it that you see? You know who I see? Yoda. Obi-Wan Kenobi. Dumbledore. I think of these old guys with white beards and like crazy outfits, and or Yoda, who's really small and speaks in these really unique languages. This is what I think of as wise. I don't know what you thought of. But oftentimes, the way that we think of those who are wise is related not so much to the actions that we do, thinking of ourselves less. We actually think about how you are good at something, or how you are old at something, or how you accomplish great things. For us, wisdom and the wise are the best educated, the knowledgeable. But James puts his finger on this in verse 14. He's given us his definition of the wise in this world. But in verse 14, he puts his finger on the worldly wisdom, the wisdom that we have, the wisdom that thinks, oh, the wise are the old ones, the smart ones, the intellectual ones. This is what he says in verse 14. If you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven. It is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. Look, if wisdom is about your age in relation to yourself, if wisdom is about what level of education you have, if wisdom is about how much wealth you have or intelligence you have, you will always find yourself jealous of the person who has more. And the moment that is, you have embraced wisdom that is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. James's definition of a wise person is entirely different than the things that we do or accomplish. His wisdom is rooted in different things. But I want to press this a little bit. Let's look at jealousy and self-ambition, because these are the two desires that James puts his finger on to expose how we believe that wisdom comes from what we accomplish. Jealousy is wanting something we don't have. Selfish ambition is desiring to prop ourselves up so that the world looks at us and says, you are amazing, you are great. And James says in verse 16, if these realities are a part of our life, if we're self-centered and selfish, verse 16, there will be disorder and every evil practice. If we embrace the wisdom of the world, and I love the NIV because it puts air quotes on wisdom. I don't know if you see that, if you can see that. It's really funny. It's like mocking wisdom of the world. If we embrace this, then we will cheat to get ahead. And in cheating to get ahead, we will frustrate those we've cheated, and they will turn their backs on us. If we embrace this mindset, people will grow to hate you and seek your own downfall. And you will embrace vile practices to combat that. You will tear others' reputations down so that you look better. And therefore, you will reap a wretched reputation that is in line with that. You will always have to do something that is evil and ungodly to respond to people who don't think you're wise. I have a simple question, because I think all of us have embraced thinking the wise are those who accomplish great things. I think all of us have that. And we think, maybe one day I'll become wise. You know, maybe when I'm older and I look like Yoda. Stop. Are you tired of trying to prop yourself up or hoping that one day yourself will be better? Are you tired that you aren't wise now? Are you tired of always thinking about yourself? Then you're in a great place. If you're holding on to yourself and you want to change, then we have to do something that is very painful. We have to die to ourselves and live to Christ. Verse 17 says that wisdom comes from heaven. Wisdom, the wisdom that comes from heaven. This means that true wisdom, the wisdom that makes one wise, is not self-generated. Wisdom is received, not achieved. And the wisdom that comes from heaven has a name. His name is Jesus. Paul declares in 1 Corinthians 1:24 that Christ is the wisdom of God. He is literally the wisdom that came down from heaven. And in Jesus, we see in him all the attributes of wisdom that James describes in verse 17 and 18. He is pure, peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. And Jesus didn't exalt himself. In fact, he thought little of himself. Paul reminds us in Philippians 2 that though Jesus was in the very nature of God, he emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, humbling himself to the point of death, even death on a cross. He thought very little of himself, and yet he did good deeds. He's the wise one. And on the cross that Jesus goes to, the wise one, this one who thought little of himself, became a fool in the eyes of the world by laying aside his power, his prestige, and his status. But he did this for a reason. So that self-protective fools like you and me, people who want to find our identity in our own strength and in our own power, people who deserve vile practices and discord and craziness, he did this so that we might receive the peace and he receive what we deserve. You see, when we turn to Jesus, we are turning away from our self-assertion and we are turning to the crucified Christ, divine wisdom. And when we turn to him, Christ enters our lives, not by our obedience, not by our achievements, but by grace. And when he comes to us, we are united to him. Through faith, we are united to him. And I want you to hear this. The Apostle Paul says this, to those who are united to Christ, they can now say, I have been crucified with Christ. That means the self that I try to prop up, it's dead. It has been crucified with Christ. And the life that I live now, I live by faith in Jesus. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. The truly wise life is the cruciform life, the life of Jesus reproduced in us by the Spirit. This is the wise life, the wisdom that is from above. This is profound. This is profound because of this truth. You can become wise right now. You don't have to wait for your degree to be wise. You don't have to wait for gray hairs to appear on your head to be wise. You don't have to wait to have great wealth to be considered wise. If you turn to Christ, you are in him, and you have received wisdom from above. Remember the definition that I gave you for James that is wisdom? It's doing good to others, thinking little of yourself. You realize that a 10-year-old can embrace that right now? A 10-year-old can be considered wise, according to James, doing good for others and for God, thinking little of themselves. This is profound for a church. Let me just speak as a pastor of this church, okay? When you look around this church, we don't have a lot of gray heads in this room. And one of the greatest, when people leave the church, one of the most often quoted reasons for people leaving the church is there's not enough gray heads in this church. It breaks my heart. And what James seems to be telling the church is this: you don't need gray heads to be wise. You need a people who die to themselves and live to God. You know what I love about this church? There are so many people in here who James would consider wise. You don't need a gray head to be wise. You need humility. And you need to follow through with what Jesus tells us to do. And we have the power to do that. The wisdom of heaven that comes to us is not something we prove, but it is a gift that we possess in Christ. And if we possess that gift, then we can be wise in this church, in our homes, in our neighborhoods, in our schools, and in this church. We don't have to assert ourselves for attention. We can yield ourselves for the benefit of others. We don't have to compete for recognition. We can serve humbly without recognition. We don't have to react with envy or ambition. We can sow peace wherever we are because we have the peace of Christ. Church, as we abide in Christ, looking to him, embracing what Paul says in Galatians 2, I have been crucified with Christ and I no longer live. As we embrace that and abide in that, merciful wisdom begins to take shape in us. We will have the pure motives of Christ. We will have the gentle speech of Christ. We will have the impartial love of Christ. And this, my friends, is what James will say is a wise person. A person who does good while thinking very little of themselves. Let me pray. Lord, I thank you for this text because one of the things that it reminds me of is they're not the qualities that we think of wisdom for people is not true to what is wisdom. Lord, I thank you that there are so many wise people in this church. They might be young. They might not have the gray heads or the big bank accounts, but you by your Spirit has worked in their lives so that they will do good for others, thinking very little of themselves. Lord, help us to embrace this wisdom that comes to us from above. Help us to shun the wisdom of the world that tells us we need to be older, we need to be smarter, we need to be wealthier, we need to be wiser. We have the wisdom from above. May we embrace this and bring good to others and to glory of your name. Amen.